Title of my talk is about critical collapse in the axion dilaton system in various dimensions, which is based on the following paper and the collaboration with Professor Luis Alvarez Gomez and some unpublished works, which hopefully will be appeared. So here is the outline of my talk. So I'm just going to talk about choptoic phenomenon. And then I will mention discrete self-similarity. What is discrete self-similarity? Of course, my talk is about continuous self-similarity, but I have to talk about discrete self-similarity as well. Then I go to axion dilaton systems. We will see that the action for axion dilaton system has an SL2R invariant. That's the key point for finding three different assumptions, which is really the nice thing. And you know, the experts have overlooked these kind of things. And then I talked about the choptoic exponent. So I talk about choptoic exponent later on. And one more thing is that here I'm going to talk about a new formalism for finding choptoic exponent, which is based on our atoms. So people, the nice thing which I should say is that people already found black hole solution in four dimension of space-time. And in fact, Hamad and Horn in 1995 found choptoic exponent in four dimension. But it turns out their method can't be generalized for higher dimension of space-time. And the reason is that once you go to higher dimension of space-time, the numerical accuracy decrease. And that's the point. So just to give you some flavor, we are going to study gravitational collapse of axion dilaton system suggested by type 2B string theory in ranging from 4 to 10. Our work is based on ADS-CFT. We are going to generalize analysis concerning the role played by SL2R, as I mentioned, that we will have two different assumptions where we call them elliptic, parabolic, and hyperbolic case. And we are going to express the new formalism on choptoic exponent, which is, that's why I'm saying we have gone beyond what's happening in the literature. So, okay, this is very, very basic thing. Sorry for those who are familiar with the subject. So classical general relativity predicts that we can make black holes if we have enough mass in a, you know, in a given region of space-time. We have a process of gravitational collapse where the matter, in fact, is squeezed towards an infinite curvature at r equals 0. So the space-time outside r equals 0 is described by vacuum solution, which can be the ADS, which can be ADS space or De Sitter space or Minkowski space. So gravitational collapse is one of the most interesting phenomena in theoretical high energy physics, and there are important problems in classical and at quantum level. So progress has been taking place over the last two decades. For example, critical phenomena could be related to ADS-CFT revolutionary. So as I mentioned, I'm just going to talk about very basic things from the beginning. So what is choptoic phenomenon? Choptoic studied gravitational collapse for a real massless scalar field coupled to gravity in order to answer question of black hole formation from regular initial conditions. And if you want, we want to find black hole solution by applying a string theory method. And Christodoulou was the guy who asked, is it possible to create black holes with an arbitrary small mass? The answer is yes, type 1 and type 2B. Type 2. But here we are just talking about type 2B collapse. So let's talk about choptoic phenomenon. Choptoic in 1993 showed the existence of two-dimension one critical surface. So for generic one-parameter families, which we call P, the initial data parameterized by P or whatever you want, there is a critical value where we called it P star, where it crosses the critical surface. And in fact, there are two possible large time evolution. Either a black hole forms with arbitrary small mass, or the system bounces, leaving four-dimensional Minkowski space-time. So the critical solution has an unstable mode, as you can see. So the eigenvalue of the relevant direction leads to black hole critical exponent, which is called choptoic exponent. So let me mention basic results. For here is the metric for a spherical collapse. And by looking at one parameter families, which we call P, of initial condition, Choptoy found the existence of critical solution. There are two basic properties, where the size of a small black hole satisfies the universal scaling law, in the sense that this is called Choptoy exponent, and the Choptoy exponent does depend just to the matter content you consider. It doesn't depend on the initial condition, and so it just depends on the matter content. But we want to talk about axiom Dilaton system, and at the end of the day, we will have three different assumptions. So we were able to show that the Choptoy exponent does depend, apart from the fact that Choptoy exponent does depend on matter content, it does depend on the assumptions, the cases or the ansatz. And to my knowledge, that's the only paper who. Sure. Yeah, you are right. Sorry, I forgot to mention. Also a space-time dimension, but this fact was already known.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
So now, meta content, you mean, for example, if I have just a scaling field and I couple it in a different way, so
sure.
Does that depend on the coupling?
Yeah. It doesn't depend. Once I am saying about it, it does depend on matter content. It means that it depends on, for example, for real scalar field, it just depends on real scalar field. How to minimally couple to gravity.
But if I change the coupling of the scalar field towards gravity, would that gamma depend on the way how I couple?
No, I don't think so. No, it just depends on the matter content. For example, we took axion Dilaton system in type 2 BSM theory, and we found the Choptoy exponent is completely different from the Choptoy in real scalar in four dimensional space time. Right?
But if you have a massive scalar field, or
just massless scalar field.
But if you have a massive?
Massive. So it turns out once you have massive object, then a Choptoy phenomenon doesn't work anymore. There is a footnote by Choptoy shows that for massless scalar and for massless fields, it works. You know. So.
What does it mean? It doesn't work. It means that the black hole never forms. Or
right. So you could think of some vector fields, and again for vector fields. So if it carries also charge, it doesn't work. It means that there is no black hole formation. But I think at the end of the conclusion, I go through these things.
But right? Just out of curiosity.
Sure.
What if you had, if I have a scalar field, there's often a non-minimal coupling, like R phi squared.
Right.
You know, if you choose a special value,
So I suppose it will change the physics, but as far as I know, nobody has done this computation.
Okay.
So, and also you can talk about Gauss-Poonen terms. Gauss-Poonen terms,
sure.
Where as far as I know, Gabor Constator, you know, they, with Rob Mann, they are working on this subject.
Wasn't there a paper just
recently?
Yeah.
Recently, it's appeared in General Relativity. Oh, I missed it up. Sorry, I was looking at high energy physics. Sorry.
I find it counterintuitive when you say that if you have a massless, if I create a shell of massless scalar field, and if I'm collapsing it, it will not form a
black hole. So there are some technical things which if you wish, I will go through them. Then yeah. I think they are related to that technical thing, but let me go ahead and we can discuss about it. So in this PowerPoint, just I wanted to mention the numerical results. The further numerical results for perfect fluids suggest that phenomena discovered by Choptoy are not just restricted to a spherically symmetric real scalar field, we can consider axiom deleton and some other matter content. So the thought experiment employed by Chovtuk in the context of numerical relativity is, in fact, to tune across initial condition, where suppress the space of initial conditions that separates black hole in the state from non-black hole in the state. And two distinct kinds of scaling appear. First, above the black hole threshold, the mass of black hole is appeared as is scaled as the following. Of course, this is just for real scale effect. Up to now, I'm just talking about discrete self-similarity. And Chovtuk found gamma should be like this. And the second thing is that exactly at threshold, there appears a unique critical solution, acting as an attractor for all nearby conditions, just like here. You see, for all nearby initial conditions, it shows some attractor. Yeah. In the sense that it doesn't depend on initial conditions, regular initial conditions. So again, I explained it. And asymptotically at a small, the fact is that asymptotically at a small time scales, T and R scales, near the collapse, it repeats itself at either decreasing time scale and R scale. So here, delta is either a fixed constant to the solution, which is called echoing parameter, demonstrating a discrete self-similarity, or some arbitrary constant illustrating continuous self-similarity. But again, till now, I haven't said anything about continuous self-similarity. So I just mentioned the numerical values obtained by Chovtuk, Gundlach, James Bland, and Gabor Constater. They have found the dimension dependence of Chovtuk, and they found the Chovtuk exponent only depends on the matter content and dimension of space-time, in the sense that the Chovtuk exponent doesn't depend on initial conditions, of course, regular initial conditions. So by computing, one way to find Chovtuk exponent for discrete self-similarity is that computing Lyapunov exponent of the small perturbation around the critical solution. I'm just saying discrete self-similarity, but the title of my talk is about continuous self-similarity, so I should go further. So here is Gabor Constater and his group described the dependence of critical exponent gamma in terms of a space-time dimension. As you can see, Chovtuk exponent is always increasing up to 14 dimension. They did a computation and they found this behavior. But these results are coming from this paper, Oren and Sorkin, 2005. But they found up to 10 dimension of a space, and there is no any contradiction here. And
Yeah.
Thank you very much. So D is the number of space time. But so you may think of why they have chosen D equal 3.5. So it doesn't have meaning. It doesn't have any application, so because the space-time dimension should be integer. But the space-time dimension appears as a parameter in the equation of motion. So there is no reason. You can actually choose it as a non-integer value, but it doesn't have any meaning physical interpretation, right? So they just wanted to find data are well fit by a simple exponential. They just wanted to find some relation Chovtuk exponent in terms of dimension of space time, right? And they found the same relation. So up to from 4 dimension up to 14 dimension, and then it goes to this value. At a higher dimension of space time, it's smooth, and it tends to some value. Sure.
Which group?
Their paper, yeah. The reference?
Gabor.
Gabor, yeah. Gabor were, and.
Were you going to comment more on the discrepancy between?
Me. About this result?
Yeah.
So this is not a contradiction. The thing is that I haven't done this computation, but as far as I know, I read all those papers. So Oren and Sorkin found the Chopto exponent from 4 up to 10 dimension over spacetime, right? So they found at 10 dimension, it has some the numerical, and once you go to higher dimension over spacetime, the numerical accuracy decreased. So apparently, they found this result. But the thing is that they mentioned once you go to higher dimension of spacetime, or once you go far from criticality, then you can go ahead. Once you have more data, in fact, you will find the Chopto exponent should be increasing. So here, the thing is that they found this relation because they just did the computation up to 10 dimension of spacetime. And they didn't, you know, they were very far from criticality. So in general, there is no, but then the thing is that, to be honest, for our matter content, accident delay tone, the same thing will be appeared. For 10 dimension, we got some you know, the Chopto exponent decrease. But I'm just saying we didn't optimize the equation of motion, and so there is no any contradiction.
So, okay, so you're saying basically that those two numbers, or those two columns of numbers, I should think, agree with each other. And
yeah.
Maybe I should maybe that both groups are being optimistic about the error bar.
Yeah, sure. But, you know, to my knowledge, their computation, you know, they did, they modified the program, and they could go further to higher dimension of space-time. But in general, there is no any contradiction. But I will, sure.
Please. This is a minimally coupled real single scale.
Right. Yeah, I haven't said anything about continuous self-similarity, and that's why I'm a little rushed to talk about our work. But I had to explain all things from the beginning. Now, so let me give you some comments. We are still very far from holographic description of black hole formation in type 2B string theory. In the context of type 2B and ADS-TFT, one would like to consider, you know, collapse on spaces where which approach asymptotically ADS-5s times S-5s. So for the bosonic fields in theory, a natural system to consider involves Einstein axiom dilaton system with five form field strengths. But here there is some apparent problem because this provides an apparent problem in considering self-similar collapse, because Einstein spaces don't allow homothetic vector fields, which is really important for having continuous self-similarity. Again, I will come to continuous self-similarity. I'm just saying some remarks. So in the context of critical gravitational collapse, we are considering collapse of matter to form a small mass black holes. And we only need to consider a small spacetime close to the singularity forms. So we don't, in fact, this should be independent of asymptotic structure of spacetime, where the collapse takes place. And that has already been checked by, you know, there is a numerical evidence in asymptotically ADS space times showing that that's the case. The paper appeared by Gabor Constant and his group in 2002. So we are going to remove cosmological constant and analyze self-similar critical collapse in dimension 4 to 10. But let's go ahead.
Just rephrase what you were saying. Is the statement that gravitational collapse is independent? You believe that gravitational collapse is independent of the asymptotic structure?
Yes,
but
I believe.
That's wrong.
That's wrong?
Yeah.
No. Why is it wrong?
Well, because, you know, there is a huge difference. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with recent work by Bison and
you mean about instability?
Well, but basically, you know, by changing the asymptotic structure, so what would happen is that the collapse doesn't happen on the first, you know, sort of on the first bounds. So if you put reflecting boundary conditions, which is something, for example, that ADS space provides,
right,
that changes dramatically the picture of collapse.
But, okay, I didn't have chance to study this thing, but have you read this paper?
Right, so what
they provided strong evidence.
What I would agree with is that if I focus on sort of on time scales, where the, you know, how long it takes for a shell to go to the origin of the space, the
right.
origin of the ADS,
right.
global ADS. Then on those timescales, there is not a big difference between, you know, but pretty much what you said, because collapse is a local phenomenon, and if a cosmological constant is small, so it doesn't affect much. But on a much larger timescales, especially if you are in global ADS, so what happens is it's a pulse and bounce off the boundaries. And so on the timescales larger than a scale for pulse to bounce off,
right.
the collapse would completely different.
So the thing is that for D equal 3 BTZ black hole, I do agree with you. So we have to take for any D, I don't agree. Sorry, for I, at least for axiom Dilaton system,
well,
we were the guy. Issue.
Established by his own, so that's why I mentioned.
Oh, okay. So I have to.
So it's not.
What?
It's not even.
But so you are very close to singularity.
I have to agree with what Alex is saying, but maybe what I should. Say that if I'm looking at the collapse and I want to identify, you know, I'm very close to a critical or this whatever this special solution, that the Chapdewick exponent and this echo time or whatever, the delta, those numbers really don't care about cosmological constant. Sort of that I can do a local.
So sorry, here we don't have any echoing parameter in continuous self similarity. We just have some more things. Let me ask Professor Rob Mann because he's expert in this subject. There is some apparent problem here. I am just talking about axiom Dilaton systems in higher dimension of space time, right? In type 2 BST theory. So all I am saying is that. In the context of critical gravitational collapse, we are considering collapse of matter to form a small mass black hole. We only need to consider a small space-time region close to where the singularity forms. So this should be independent of asymptotic structure of a structure of space-time where the collapse takes place. So that's why we are going in four dimension and higher dimension of space time. We are going to remove cosmological constant and go ahead. But could you please repeat your statement, B-zone and the other?
No, it's just so gravitational evolution in asymptotic ADS space is entirely different. There are, as you probably aware, if I have just even a single scale field, can have normalizable and non-normalizable component near the boundary. And the physics really crucially depends on, you know, on what am I doing with the boundary conditions. So strictly
right.
speaking, the statement that I was referring to work of Bizon is that in ADS, the collapse occurs generically. So from this perspective, you know, no matter what the initial condition you start, you will form a black hole, and there are reasons from ADS-CT why you would expect this. There are slight asterisks to this, what I mean by generic, but apart from that, that's a statement. But I would also believe that the critical phenomena will depend, even a scalar field in ADS, I would expect that it should also depend on what I do with boundary conditions. That has the reason why from ADS-CFT perspective, because different boundary conditions correspond from the quantum field theory side, different couplings. Couplings of relevant operators. And so basically a natural thing to expect that a thermalization process, which is what a black hole formation is, should depend on, you know, what is my quantum field theory is, what are the relevant couplings in my quantum field theory. So this is just sort of the simplest case why I would say that.
I have to think about your statement.
It should be completely different in ADS precisely because we have ADS here.
So all you are saying is that it depends on asymptotic space also.
It should depend, but
for axiom Dilaton system, no.
No, but I mean, I think it's if you have a scalar field you could be near the threshold of collapse such that it'll form a black hole right away or not in AES.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
That was known. And I think what happened is people thought, well, if it doesn't off, it goes, and it's never going to form. But what Bizon said is, suppose it's not going to collapse, it goes through itself, goes out, but then the reflective boundary conditions bring it back again and again, and eventually it will form a black
what
hole.
What I am saying now is on top of that, I'm saying that the reflection would be determined exactly what the non-normalizable components are, and how the pulse is reflected near the boundary should depend and will depend on non-normalizable components of your scalar field, what you're going to do next. And so that's why whether or not you will form a collapse on a 7 bounds or on 300 bounds, or maybe
it'll care about that.
It will care
yeah,
about
I think,
that.
I think that's right. It'll care about
so,
that.
So that's why I'm saying that all these issues in asymptotically ABS space
yeah.
just
yeah.
completely
so,
different.
So I guess it's that middle state that it should be independent of the asymptotic structure.
Yeah, that's what
I well, I think it will be. I think it will be only if it's sort of near the threshold for the
yeah, of course, that's what I said on the time scales. If
yeah.
we look on the time scale way, way shorter than a time scale to
yeah.
cause
the yeah.
AES,
sure.
then I agree. Again, modulus the fact that there is still a cosmological constant, so it's almost like additional matter.
But here I'm going to talk about axiom dilaton system, and we found the asymptotic structure at infinity, and so I'm a little bit puzzled. Where it doesn't depend on asymptotic behavior for axiom dilaton. My computation is not for real scalar field.
Do you have a cosmological?
No. Yeah. I'm not talking about. Let me go ahead to see. Okay, now I can discuss about it. But one thing which I have to say is that these people, Erdli, Hirschman, and Horn, in this paper found a four-dimensional elliptic case, but their method easily can be generalized to higher dimensional space-time and two other implementations. So let's start with axiom dilaton systems, and I will go through the asymptotic structure. So we are going to report on the threshold behavior of gravitational collapse or Chapotov exponent in classical four-dimensional space-time, which is coupled to low-energy effective string theory. In general, we are going to talk about general relativity, which is coupled to axiom dilaton. So both axiom dilaton can be combined to this one, and the action could be written as the following. So here is a scalar curvature, and this is the somehow, I don't know what you call the kinetic term of axiom dilaton over image of tau. So that the equation of motion by taking variation from the metric and tau are this one. But the nice thing here is that the action, as you can see, is SL2R invariant, right? So since the action is SL2R invariant, we will have three different assumptions for the answers. People already found elliptic case, but you actually need to have two other assumptions. Sorry, is there any question? As I mentioned, the action has a global symmetry, not present in general relativity. So theory is classically invariant under the SL2R transformation. I don't need to talk about the SL2R transformation. All are experts. So as an instance, the Maxwell equation are conformally invariant in the sense that the gauge transformation is allowed to accompany each conformal transformation. Now the question comes to us is that how can we write down the infinitesimal transformation for tau of T and R. So the answer is that tau of T and R should be written such that it follows an infinitesimal transformation. So okay, you are all familiar with this metric, which is spherically symmetric, and now I'm just talking about continuous self-similarity. It means that we work exactly at threshold for black hole formation, and we want to consider a critical solution. It also means that the existence of a homothetic Killing vector Z generating global scale transformation. So in a spherical coordinates, Z can be written as just here, but by defining a scale invariant Z is minus R over T, we can massage the equation and find the another form of Z. But the nice thing is that here is that self-similarity of metric means that all the functions which are appeared in the metric U of Z, U of and B could be expressed in terms of just as a scaling parameter, which is Z. So since the, let's back to the question. Next question to address, which of course I mentioned, is that transformation of tau of TR. Since the action is a cell-to-R invariant, we can compensate scale transformation of the coordinate of TR, T and R by SL2R transformation. So if we change the variables from this coordinate to another coordinate, we find the homothetic Killing vector should satisfy the following relation. And this shows that alpha 0, alpha 1, and alpha 2 should be real number. That's why we have to have three different assumptions. So let me just, maybe it's trivial too, but I'm going to mention the quadratic polynomial here has two real roots, which can be two complex conjugate or a double root, real root, or two distinct real numbers. So they correspond to compensating a scale transformation, as I mentioned. By a straightforward manipulation and massaging equation of motion, redefinition of three cases, yield the following unsolved for tau of Tz. People already, Erdley, Hirschman, and Horn found these unsolved. This unsolved called elliptic case, where omega is a real constant, but not arbitrary. So under a scaling transformation, T goes to lambda T, and tau changed by an SL2R rotation, but boost related to another unsolved. But up to now, I just mentioned some Erdley, Hirschman, and Horn works. But let's move to, okay, I don't need to talk about some remarks on omega and some details. We can discuss about them if you wish later on. So as I mentioned, we have two other assumptions. The other assumption is, in fact, hyperbolic case. So the only difference is, in fact, the coefficient of I removed, and here there is no any I anymore. And under a scaling transformation, tau of T and R change by an SL2R boost. So the last unsolved or assumption is, in fact, parabolic case. By doing some SL2R transformation, we can find this relation and redefining F of Z. So in all these expressions, F of Z is an arbitrary complex function, and omega is a real parameter to be fixed by requiring the critical solution to be regular. Now, what I want to say is that people already found black hole solution in four dimension just for elliptic case. And then there is a method in the literature which is called Hamada-Horn-Stewart method, which is based on doing perturbation and replacing perturbation into equation of motion and keeping all terms up to first order in epsilon. But it turns out for higher dimensional space-time, first of all, it doesn't work anymore. At least I couldn't find their method efficient. And we just did the computation for higher dimensional space-time, 5 up to 10 dimension, to actually find out Chov-Tog exponent to see what's going on. Then for hyperbolic and parabolic cases also we did the computation, and we found Chov-Tog exponent is different. So that's the general idea, which shows that the Chov-Tog exponent, apart from those facts, I mean, Chov-Tog exponent does depend on space-time dimension and matter content. It also depends on assumptions or cases.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
You're mentioning the hyperbolic case, the elliptic case, the parabolic case.
Right.
These are different gauge choices. These are different choices of configurations.
These are different assumptions for the function of tau of T and R. I said that here the action was invariant, so under a SL2R transformation, so tau of T and R should be written such, should be invariant under SL2R transformation. So the only way for writing these is that you should write down the infinitesimal transformation for tau of T and R, right? But once you apply conformal killing, homothetic killing vector on this tau of T and R, by definition, it should be vanished. So this is a quadratic equation. It has three roots, right? Where the first one is related to elliptic case, the second one is related to hyperbolic, and third one parabolic. But
when you say that, that means when I stick in that answer, it's like
Sure. Yeah, I will go through equation of motion, and I just show you some of the equation of motion, just to see what's going on.
So I'm a little bit puzzled again by sort of related to this thing. So do you actually do simulation at two dimensions? So is your do you actually simulate your system of partial differential equations in time and the radial coordinates?
So the thing is that here you are still thinking about real scalar field. Here I'm just talking about axiom dilatorian system. So we don't have a partial differential equation. We will have ordinary differential equation.
That is exactly good. So what you did by coming up with ansatz, you choose a particular ansatz and assume that the evolution of the system would be, sort of in terms of the scaling solution corresponding to whatever the exact variable.
Can I pause you? Just one thing is that I we haven't chosen some arbitrary ansatz. So equation of motion says us.
If there are partial differential equations, you can choose certain scaling solutions. You can choose certain scaling variables so the PDE system will turn into an ODE system.
Right.
That's basically what you did.
No. I'm misunderstanding your question. But the thing is that we had three different ansatz, and the equation of motion are ordinary differential equations.
Okay. So that's then what I said is what you did. So right. Okay. So you actually never checked whether if you I don't see in this yeah. So what is not clear to me how this ansatz is stable. If I were to do a full numerical evolution in T and R, right?
Yeah.
Is whether it's stable or not.
Good. I will come to we haven't done any computation about this kind of thing. And I wanted to say exactly the same thing in open question, right? We haven't done this computation. That's a very nice subject to do so, but we haven't done this. Thanks. But I will come to it in open question. So I thought maybe you. Right.
So if I look at that tau there, am I exciting just the axion, or am I exciting the axion and the dilaton?
So,
I guess the question amounts to is omega a complex variable?
I mentioned omega shouldn't be. Since you are discussing, you are asking some detail. Let me mention some remarks about omega. Due to this relation for the answer, the relation for tau of T and R, due to the last this equation, it turns out the following answer is inconsistent, and I will come to I just going to mention some things about some remarks. It turns out if we use these ansatz in the equation of motion, we will gain the following value. So alpha naught, alpha 1, alpha 2, if you remember, they have to be real numbers, right? Because they are, we mentioned. So this ansatz is inconsistent unless omega should be imaginary, purely imaginary, which can't, omega can't be purely imaginary. Because at the end of the day, you're left with five equations of motion with six parameters. So omega cannot be imaginary number. That's the fact that omega has to be real number. And also omega shouldn't be omega equal zero case is providing us some constant solution where v of z is 1 because we just fixed time scaling, and f of z is constant. So to make sense, we have to find leading behavior and next to the leading behavior of the function in the presence of non-vanishing omega. Right? Okay. I don't know. Sure. So just.
But I'll ask again. Was that new ansatz that you wrote down? Was tau real?
Tau real? So the new ansatz, elliptic case was already known, right? But two more ansatz were unknown, and we discovered them: hyperbolic one and parabolic. So you may think about hyperbolic. Let me go back. So in hyperbolic case, you can say, oh, the ansatz is looks like the ansatz looks like elliptic case, right? The only difference is I is removed here and I over there removed. And equation of motion are quite similar to each other, but the physics completely different.
Can you
elliptic case.
If I look in that box on the right hand side, is that a real function?
Here?
Over
side,
there.
Is that real? F of z is a complex function.
Oh, F is complex.
Yeah, I mentioned this here. F of z should be complex and omega has to be real number here. In all these expressions, f of z is an arbitrary complex function, and omega should be an integer.
Okay.
So, okay. In order to reply you, I'm afraid about showing equation of motion are highly nonlinear and non-trivial, but let's talk about them. So here we are implementing a spherical symmetry. Gravitational degrees of freedom don't propagate. So there are no gravitational waves, which means that we have to use all Bianchi identities to remove some of the function in terms of just f of z. So that's why I'm saying u of z and b of z should be expressed in terms of just f of z. And if we use Einstein equation for angular variables, we get the same, the following relation. So in fact, u of z should be removed in terms of b prime and b. And at the end of the day, the other equations of motion for self-similar solution involve just b of z and f of z, where b of z would be an inhomogeneous first order linear inhomogeneous equation for b of z, whose initial condition should be determined by time scaling, b of 0 should be 1, and the f of z, and together with initial condition f of z and f prime of z by requiring a smoothness of critical solution. So in fact, initial conditions assumed as smooth may be given on the hypersurface t equal minus 1. And this determines not only initial condition, but also the possible value for omega. So let's go to equation of motion. I'm just showing this, or I think they are really horrible. Equation of motion in elliptic case in four dimension are given by the system of ordinary differential equations. This is b prime and this is f double prime. So as I mentioned earlier on, we can generalize the idea to higher dimension of space-time. Of course, here I forgot to write down because we did computation up to 10 dimensional space-time. So those equations of motion are valid for 5, 6, up to 10. But I have no idea about 11 and 12, so I should be precise. Let me mention some technical things. It's because you asked about omega, so I have to mention this fact. It's useful to note that equations of motion are invariant under a global redefinition of phase of f of z. So since f is a complex function, we can write down f in terms of modulus and phase. But the nice thing here is that the equation of motion are independent of the phase of f of z. So we can choose the phase of f of z to any convenient value at particular z that we will choose it to be origin, at origin to be zero value. And in a hyperbolic case, if you see the equation of motion are more or less the same as elliptic case. But unfortunately, I couldn't work on a hyperbolic in higher dimension of space-time. I just found a four-dimension solution for four dimension, But for higher dimension, it's really terrible to find solution. And finally, in parabolic case, the equation of motion are a bit simpler, but still they are, you know. So I forgot to mention one interesting thing, because I mentioned about the elliptic case. And in hyperbolic case, equation of motion are invariant under constant scaling, f to the lambda f. So we can choose either absolute value of f of z, or real or its imaginary part as we wish at a particular value of z, right?
Critical profile in the scale in the gravitational collapse.
Yes.
So then somehow there should be a singularity.
Yeah. You are right. I'm you know mentioning it step by step. So I will talk about they have five singularities, and I will mention the numerical the procedure. So please hold on.
But how do you know that those are the singularities? See, that's the thing. How do you know that the singularities? So basically, in some sense, you expect solutions to be singular, right? But I'm saying that if you give me a gravitational system with a scalar field, I can produce you tons of solutions which would be singular. Now, I would not be, but how are you going to claim that the singular solutions that you found have anything to do with a critical point in the gravitation?
So there is a method which I will talk about.
Okay.
If I'm not replying you, please ask again, right? So just for hyperbolic also they are invariant on their shifts. So by shifts of f of z to a constant, again the equation of motion are invariant. And so we can choose its real part as we wish at particular point. That's really crucial because at the end of the day, if we divide to real part and imaginary part, we will have five equation of motion. So we have to have five boundary conditions. Now, I hope to answer your question by properties of singular critical solution in elliptic case and talking about singularities. So here, I'm just going to talk very briefly about critical solutions and properties. So equation of motion are, let's talk about the elliptic case. Yeah, for four dimension, because people already found black hole solution in four dimension. The equation of motion have five singularities. At z equal zero, at z equal infinity, and v of z equal, here. And b equal plus minus z, and z equal plus minus zero. So in all three nonlinear systems, elliptic, hyperbolic, and parabolic, we have five singular points, as I mentioned. First of all, z equal plus minus z zero represents the axis of r equal zero because z is minus r over t. And regularity is easily imposed. So if you wish 1/r, you can divide 1/r, and this is somehow an overall coefficient. And what about z equal infinity? Z equal infinity represents a hypersurface t equal zero. But the spacetime should be smooth on this hypersurface, except at the axis. Here, just if we take a look at here, there is a spacetime singularity at t and r equal zero, which is a single point in the causal structure. And this is past light cone shows that b of z equal plus z and b of z equal minus z. So, and what about z equal infinity? Z equal infinity is also, if you wish, apparent singularity. So by coordinate transformation or redefining fields, we can remove z equal infinity. I will talk about it a few minutes later. So the simplest, the simplest way to see there is no problem at z equal infinity is through change of variables and redefining a field of f of z and v of z. Here, I don't know, I should mention or not, this is somehow the method. So using the function of, we divide it to modulus and phase, and we can divide the equation of motion to modulus and phase and et cetera. So by applying Frobenius method, actually, we, at the end of the day, we can find the value of the asymptotic structure of the function as z equal infinity. So the modulus is this one, and the phase is constant. But because of finding asymptotic solution, the only acceptable solution is z to the minus I w, because otherwise it's singular. It becomes singular. So at infinity, the solution is going to be just like this. And at omega, at infinity, z equal infinity, this goes to zero.
It's absolutely not clear to me how you choose which singularities should be allowed, which singularities should not be allowed. If you're claiming that the equations that you constructed correspond to a critical solution in the gravitational collapse, we expect to have a singular horizon there. There could be additional singularity in the matter context. So I have, honestly, I have no clue writing down equations like that and saying this singularity is the one that, I want to keep this singularity. Maybe, the right way to do is to make z equal zero singular.
Sorry, you are saying at z equal zero, we have singular?
No, I'm just saying I don't know, and I don't think there are any physics. So let me back up a little bit. Would you agree, is that a correct statement that your equations describe a critical phenomenon in a gravitational collapse?
Sure.
Now, they describe a critical point in the gravitational collapse, they should correspond to a singular black hole or a singular horizon. So
why is the issue singular to singular?
Well, I mean, do you have a horizon here?
I have, but all of them are apparent. All singularities are apparent singularities.
No,
there is no naked singularity.
Well, this is what I'm surprised. I thought that in a choptic solution, if you focus on the p star, that's a critical point, and it's singular. There should be singularity somewhere in a space time, and only for that solution you can claim some self similarity, and you can claim that there is a way of reducing, a PDE into a set of ODEs, because it is only that critical solution which has some self similarity built in.
So the only singularity which I think you are talking is a causal structure, t equals 0, r equals 0. But all the old...
you don't have t and r. You have c, which is t
divided by r. We rescale.
There are infinitely many ways how I can have z equal infinity, right? I can have t and r goes to infinity simultaneously.
So
in such a way that their ratio is infinity.
I think you are not allowed to take the t and r goes to infinity at the same time, or go to infinity at the same time.
Well, 5 minutes.
Oh. 5 minutes. So, okay, I just wanted to universal boundary condition for this is time scaling and by applying Frobenius method, and we can find the behavior of the function at zero and also the behavior of the function at infinity. Then the method was that requiring regularity both at origin and z plus leaves only four parameters to be determined, just this one. So to find, maybe it's useful to note that. To find them, we proceed by integration from close to the zero towards z plus, because z plus is another singularity. And also from a little above z plus towards the origin, and match result at the middle, let's say at z equal 1. By matching function at 11 first derivatives, we are left with four parameters to be determined. So here, I don't have time, just showing the plot. And time to, the Hamada-Horn-Stewart method was about perturbation, applying, given the critical solution, we can perturb it to find critical exponent as follows. Let h be any function of determining critical solution. So if you replace this equation, this identity in equation of motion, and you keep up to first order in epsilon, gives a set of linear perturbation, and which has some eigenvalue equation. The fastest growing perturbation is related to the Choptaw exponent. Which is given by the following relation. But our method, let us mention just at least our results for 4 dimension up to 10 dimension of a space time. We found Choptaw exponent and the plot. So as I mentioned, at higher dimension, it's more difficult to obtain numerical stability near the collapse. And it, here is the, our plot. Our method is based on, let me just a few minutes talk about our method, because I couldn't work with Hammett and Hornsworth in higher dimensional space time. So in order to proceed, first we keep general form of the metric in terms of the function u and v and etc. So to find Pertov equation, we need to consider the general form of the Ansatz in terms of f of tr. So we, if you wish, we shouldn't apply continuous self-similarity from the beginning. To write down perturbation, we need to take variation from the fields u and v. So here there are variation from the fields and variation from the ansatz. So we need to keep those R01 and the other one. So by applying continuous self-similarity and perturb and unperturb function, just pay attention to unperturbed function and perturbed function, and also the metric. We can get rid of the u, as always. And at the end of the day, we find some relation for v, and also we can apply the same method for finding a relation for f prime. So boundary condition, which I mentioned already. And at the end of the day, by applying, by considering this perturbed function and the values of unperturbed function we have already found, we can find out one equation. So the solution with largest value of real of kappa related to chop to exponent. Let me open question that you ask. We haven't addressed it yet. I think we are, I'm not able to address this question. So maybe expert in numerical relativity could answer this question. I was talking with Gabor Constater. So the SL2R symmetry of classical type 2 Bessel integral is supposed to break to SL2Z once quantum effects are taken into account. This raises a very interesting question, is that the critical solution may not be continuous self-similarity, but rather it will have discrete self-similarity. And for having discrete self-similarity, we have to solve full equation of motion, as you mentioned. So in the other words, we want to know whether there are some elements of gamma such that this relation holds. We don't know. So as a comment to settle this question, one would have to do full numerical integration with Einstein equation without assuming continuous self-similarity. And in conclusion, full-scale numerical work is needed, is highly desirable for several reasons. As I mentioned, the solution may not be continuous self-similar. So maybe the solution may be discrete self-similarity, has discrete self-similar solution, discrete self-similar similarity, which may manifest themselves by a form of Chop-Tog echoing, in which that the system is invariant under echoing after a finite scale transformation by the factor of e to the minus delta up to an SL2R transformation. So just 1 minute is that here we found this critical exponent for dimensional spacetime. Hammett and Hornsworth by their method, they found this relation. Sorry, this value for the Chop-Tog exponent. We found Chop-Tog exponent in 4 dimension for hyperbolic, this one, and also for hyperbolic, for parabolic case, hyperbolic, elliptic, and parabolic case. So this shows that apart from that, Chop-Tog exponent I mentioned several times does depend on the space-time dimension. It also does depend on related ansatz. Of course, for all matter content here, for all three different nonlinear systems, all matter contents are the same. And okay, so thank you very much.
So let's say that you were to go and simulate it, right? So you start with some initial profile and you let it evolve and it does what it does. So these different cases would correspond to different initial profiles? Different initial conditions that you would stick in, or like how would you compare
No, so you know, you came a little bit late. I mentioned that they don't depend on boundary condition. And that's the fact that Chop-Tog exponent doesn't depend on regular initial condition. For all matter, for all three nonlinear systems here, elliptic, parabolic, hyperbolic, actually I found universal boundary condition, but by the method which I mentioned, Frobenius method at singularities at working out each singularity, by itself. So I found universal boundary condition for elliptic, hyperbolic, and parabolic cases, and they don't depend on in regular initial conditions.
But they're all different from each other, so I'm just trying to get a sense for how much of the universality depends on your choice of the onslaughts, and how much of the universality depends on the choice of the matter content. So the fact that it's actually a build-a-ton plus, like that.
Sure, that's a good question, but I have no answer about it, to how much they depend on the onslaught, or how much depend on the initial. No, I have no idea. I couldn't answer, and I think I couldn't answer. Maybe somebody could answer this question. I could.
I just don't understand. Given what you are doing, right, that there are several scaling solutions that you are discussing, like parabolic and all these cases, that is, in my mind, that's an implicit statement, an implicit acknowledgement that, you know, your full evolution should depend on initial condition. And so those scaling solutions will be attractive for different set of initial conditions.
I'm sorry, you're talking about real scalar field, but you're
no,
talking,
I'm
about
talking about
continuous self-singularity.
I'm talking about the models that you are doing. Okay, I think it's, as you said, it would be incredibly interesting to actually do the full simulation.
Sure.
But if what you are saying has anything to do with a critical collapse, then the fact that you are having three different scaling solutions, different cases, right? It's parabolic and all of that. It corresponds that those are the scaling solutions. So eventually, you know, those are like three different critical points in some sense.
Sure.
And now if I start with a generic initial condition, you know, evolving my PDE, the evolution should choose which critical point I will end up with. And so from this perspective.
Sorry, your assumption is wrong. You are not allowed to use whatever what initial condition you want. You are actually constrained to take a look at the equation of motion and choose boundary condition by equation of motion.
Because you reduce PDE into ODE, and I have lots of questions and lots of, you know, quasi sensible thing to do. I'm saying evolving the full evolution of the partial differential equation.
Sure.
In Choptic case, you didn't have to, you know, constraints. So when he makes a statement that something independent of the initial condition, he chooses different profiles and he evolves his PDEs and he sees the scaling solution.
Sure.
Independent what the, so all I'm saying is that I want to take your system, which is axion dilaton, and just do the same. And so now what I'm pointing out, and this is presumably what you had in mind, is the fact that if I have to believe that those are the three, you know, kind of the three cases that you consider, then there should be a dependence on the initial condition.
So I got your point, but I don't know how to interpret it. They should be dependent on the initial condition. How it comes to you, I don't understand.
So what it sounds like, what you said before, is that if you stick within the parabolic case, what I thought you said was that if you took a Gaussian pulse or a step function or a tanh, you're seeing universality. Is that correct or was that wrong?
Yes, it's correct.
Okay. Then if you did elliptic, you see universality differently. What they're saying, and I was going to ask this, but what they're saying is, okay, suppose you don't know what class you're in, just take some configuration of axion and dilaton, what have you, and let it grind through. It doesn't know if it's parabolic or elliptic or what it is.
Yes.
So it's got to do something, but how could it be universal? Because you've already bifurcated it into two classes that have different universality.
Yeah.
So something's got to give, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there should be.
It's either going to go in one direction or it's going to find two critical points. I don't know what it'll do.
Or something which is more likely. Okay, I'm not saying more likely because I cannot make the statement like this. But I'm very, very suspicious of identifying critical points the way you did. I mean, by reducing a system of PDEs into ODEs and, you know, doing all the gymnastics that you did. But one possibility, if we are optimistic and if that has to do, so either out of the three critical points or three cases, only one will survive and then it would be universal. So
yes, that might be true.
That is one possibility. Or the other possibility, again, if I am optimistic, that what you did made sense, that there are really these three critical cases, but then there should be a bifurcation in the initial condition. So that's
so,
all.
I mean, something's got to give one way.
Exactly. It's just inconsistent to make a statement like, you know, there is an independence on the initial condition, and what I presented to you is correct. It just doesn't make sense.
So all I was saying is that boundary condition, I was talking about the equation of motion. And this is not the first paper up here. So all experts in this subject, Hamadi, Horn, and Stuart, maybe they left physics. But they did the same analysis by taking a look at equation of motion and, you know, finding out boundary condition. So perhaps I shouldn't say universal boundary condition, but the things that I was taking a look at the equation and understood, okay, there are five singular points. In
there's a difference between boundary conditions and initial conditions, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And also there is a difference between initial conditions which fall into one of your parabolic or other cases, or a generic which doesn't have the appropriate scale.
So could you please give an example?
So what you're saying, I mean, no one is disputing, I think, that if you put in your parabolic onsets,
mm-hmm.
shove it into the equations and grind, you're getting
mm-hmm.
the answers
that's
you're getting. The question is, what if you don't put in that onsets? Just put in some generic profile of t equals zero, a Gaussian maybe, of something.
Yes, as a function of r.
As a function of t and r?
Yeah.
No,
just as
a
function of r.
Just as
t
a function
equals zero.
Of r.
But then you let the partial DEs evolve and see what happens. That's the question.
Yeah.
And so the fact that it's different for whether it's elliptic or parabolic is, well, I would regard it as an opportunity, so to speak. One wants to know what's going to happen if you haven't classed it. If you decided to bifurcate into elliptic or parabolic or what have you, what if you don't make that decision? Just let the thing do what it's going to do.
In fact, you should not be able to make this decision of scaling a priori, okay? So you have to set the whole idea of critical phenomena is that where independence of initial condition is in the sense as we are all talking, that you should be allowed to set an initial profile that doesn't exhibit any type of scaling, doesn't fall in any of your, and then an evolution of the TDE should lead to some of this critical. If any of this is a critical point.
Yeah.
But okay, I don't know. Maybe
it does seem that it'll either bifurcate or else.